Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about Khrushchev's secret speech in 1956 that saw a decisive break with the legacy of Stalinism and was a clear denunciation of Stalin and the cult of personality that surrounded him. Stalin died in 1953 on the 5th of March, in circumstances which some conspiracy theorists suggest imply that he may well have been murdered, possibly by Beria, his chief of secret police. Whether this is the case or not is a moot point, probably something that will never in our lifetimes be properly uncovered. The degree to which Russia guards her archives now, in the renaissance of kind of Russian secrecy that's underway at the moment, means that any answer to that one's probably out with our ability to understand. But the man was 74, and he had ill health problems for a number of years. And the paranoia that surrounded him meant that he died alone, and the security surrounding his apartment meant that there was nobody able to get into the room for well over 12 hours. There are a number of diarists from the time who report this curious condition existing in Stalinist Russia, of an immense confusion about what to do following his death, a sense not just at the highest political levels, but kind of seeping deep down through society, of a kind of emasculation, a sense that nobody was capable of taking any action without Stalin being there. Stalin, the figure who had seen Russia through the Great Patriotic War, 1941-45, and who had transformed Russia with the five-year plans. His cult of personality, particularly post-war, had been such that it had kind of eviscerated and gutted Russian Soviet politics and society to the extent that there was a kind of a paralysis following Stalin's death. For 5 years after his death, there was a power struggle culminating in 1958 with Khrushchev's emergence as General Secretary. But in 1956, Khrushchev took the extraordinary step, really, of denouncing Stalin in a secret speech at the 20th Party Congress. And the speech was titled "On the Cult of Personality and Its Consequences." It is interesting to note, though, that 1956 was not the beginnings of de-Stalinization. Almost immediately following Stalin's death, the gulags, who had a combined population of about 3 million at that particular point, start to be emptied. Lavrenty Beria, the final of Stalin's three great henchmen, from Yagoda to Yezhov to Beria himself, was a man who, whilst being utterly ruthless in his personal and his party conduct, still looked at the gulag and realised it was a huge money-losing enterprise, that the labour that was extracted from prisoners was in many cases next to useless, and the actual administration of the camps was sucking up valuable resources that needed to be used now in the pursuit of the Cold War. The camps made no sense to him, and that was really the level upon which he was looking at things as head of the NKVD. And so the dissolution of the camps was only possible following Stalin's death, isn't it? Immediately a mass amnesty of prisoners, and within several years the camps really have dwindled to a shadow of their former size. In part, this was due to a series of Gulag rebellions that took place in 1953 and 54. The inmates of the Gulags were of a different breed to those before the war. Many were former soldiers who had been unfortunate enough to be accused as being traitors and cowards during the war and had wind up behind the mesh of the Gulags. And they had formed all sorts of alliances with the criminals who had the Urki criminal classes, who had been left to rot in the gulags and used as kind of unofficial camp supervisors. Eventually, in 1962, Khrushchev would do something that no other Soviet leader had done up until that point, and that was to acknowledge the gulags and to discuss them in an open, well, semi-open way. This was seen as a kind of a topic that one in the Politburo should never be seen to address. On the eve of Stalin's death, he appeared to be building up to the final purge of his life, the mass killings that had taken place between 1936 and 1938, had been the pinnacle of indiscriminate terror in Russia. But after the war, his view fell upon Jews in Russia, and particularly Jews employed in the medical profession. His obsession with Israel as an American ally made him look upon Jews as being disloyal to the Soviet state, and an innate anti-Semitism has always really lurked in the back of Stalin's mind, came to the fore. But it was also more than likely going to be a perfect opportunity to purge people within the party who Stalin believed had got a bit too big for him to tolerate. Particularly Beria. Beria survived but was arrested and executed a couple of months after Stalin's death in June of 1953. So on the 24th of February 1956, the 20th Party Congress came to an end, and as the delegates dispersed, word got around that there was something else happening and they needed to make their way back to the main chamber. There were delegates who were given special passes to come in. The press and non-party members were excluded. And there was a general atmosphere that something momentous was about to happen. There had been certain party members who had been rehabilitated from the gulags who were allowed to attend, about 100 in all, who were there really to make a clear and bold statement to the rest of the party. There's an awful lot of symbolism within the party congresses that send out clear and unambiguous messages. Khrushchev spoke for 4 hours in total, and some of the delegates were brought to the point of nervous breakdown. Now, this isn't an overreaction. This isn't kind of melodrama. What was happening with these delegates, party members, is the entire basis of the world they had understood, many of them since they were children, was being turned upside down. The revelation that Stalin had been a cruel and monstrous leader was genuinely shocking to them. Even though many of them knew full well about the gulags, and many of them knew full well about the terror, to their eyes these were both necessary things. The terror had been an essential facet of, in their eyes, of strengthening Russia, not weakening it. On the eve of a war with fascism, Stalin had been the conscientious rooter out of fifth columnists and traitors, and the kinds of people who would go on to betray Russia should she be invaded by the Nazis. The fact that Stalin had made a pact with Hitler in 1939, once again, was conveniently edited from the narrative, or interpreted as being an essential task that he had to do to play for time in order to prepare Russia for the great struggle ahead. Stalin was consistently interpreted as being obviously a benevolent and a caring patriarch, a kind of a father of the nation. The gulags, once again, were not places of forced labour and torment. These were places where the ethics of Soviet society were taught, where people who had veered away from the practice of being good Soviet citizens, or people who from enemy classes and needed to be taught the value of labour and about commitment to the Soviet idea and personal sacrifice for the greater collective good. That's where these people were sent and re-educated. This was the kind of the prevailing view. And there was a cathartic and shocking moment for a great many party members, and one that which I would imagine a great many of them probably rejected what Khrushchev had to say. There was it's not simply a case that one speech can change people's minds. Now, the content of the speech is disseminated outside of the party circles by rumour, by suggestion, really. There no stenographer's notes were kept. Khrushchev spoke from his own notes, and there was an immense kind of ripple, if you will, of disquiet from the 20th Party Congress. And obviously this ripple disseminates westwards. It's very quickly picked up.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
In Britain, America, and the rest of Europe, that something quite extraordinary has occurred. By March the 1st, Khrushchev had really found his resolve. He had perhaps been a little anxious on the reading of the speech, that there may be some kind of apocalyptic fallout. But by the 1st of March, he's actually had the speech distributed and printed in thousands and thousands of copies to party branches all across the country. And this is the way, really, that a mass understanding of the secret speech is disseminated. This widespread dissemination of the secret speech has its most important repercussions in Eastern Europe, but we'll attend to that shortly. First, we'll have a look at what the speech actually said and why particularly Khrushchev was saying the things that he was saying, given that he had been a key player in many of Stalin's crimes. Khrushchev referenced Lenin's testament that was written at the end of 1922 and the first few weeks of 1923. It was the obvious document to bring out in order to tarnish Stalin's reputation. In fact, had that document been published at the time, in 1924, following Lenin's death, then there would perhaps have been much less of a chance that Stalin would have made it to the position of dictator of the Soviet Union by the end of the 1920s. There was a great missed opportunity there. All parties within the testament, Trotsky, Zinoviev, Kamenev, and others, were roundly criticised, but Stalin was singled out for particular chastisement by Lenin, and his career would probably not have survived had that document been published. So it was a great place for Khrushchev to hit Stalin's memory where it hurt. Stalin's cult of personality was portrayed by Khrushchev as being a deviation from communist ideals, certainly something that Lenin had specifically requested did not happen to him in his lifespan or posthumously, and the assumption of dictatorial leadership and the withering away of collective leadership was again seen as a deviation from the spirit of October 1917. Khrushchev was particularly animated by the effect of Stalin on his own party and the mass killings that took place in the 1930s, and the fact that though the purging of the party had resulted in the loss of so many old comrades, he was particularly keen to emphasise Stalin's failings in the Great Patriotic War and the exaggerations of Stalin's role, the falsifications really. The huge deportations of entire nationalities from different regions within the USSR, the dumping of Poles within Kazakhstan, the moving of Georgians and Uzbeks, and the mass killings that took place along the way. These were all topics that Khrushchev focused on. He's a bit less keen to discuss the Soviet famines and his particular role in the deaths of probably 5, but perhaps more 5 million Ukrainian peasants that happened at the beginning of the 1930s. He also focused on some of Stalin's other more invisible legacies, such as the suppression of all artistic, cultural and literary endeavours to the cause of socialist realism, and the use of his particular cultural commissar, Andrei Zhdanov, in this pursuit. And this, again, would lead to something of a thawing of literary endeavours in the 1950s and 60s. So why did Khrushchev do all this? Why did he go to the time and the trouble to rubbish Stalin in this fashion, to point out what many knew, and why did he embrace the risks that this involved? Why did he do all of this when it was perhaps unnecessary, given his assumption of the role of premier? Well, more than likely, Khrushchev's motivation was to criticise Stalin in order to give himself a kind of a clear power base within the party. It was to give himself to present himself as a break with the past and to outmanoeuvre rivals for his position. By damning Stalin and therefore damning other Stalinists and thus tippy-toeing around his own involvement in Stalinism, Khrushchev could condemn a whole tranche of the past and the people involved in it who were still alive in the present, and thus create a new agenda for Russia based around Khrushchev's own position, ideas and outlook. Khrushchev proved himself very quickly in Budapest to be no liberal. Once the news of the secret speech had seeped into the occupied new Soviet empire of Eastern Europe, the first place that anti-Soviet and anti-Stalinist sentiments really took hold was in Hungary. And I think it's probably better to talk about the Hungarian uprising in a separate podcast, because it requires a lot more depth and analysis. But the subsequent suppression of that demonstrated that Khrushchev was by no means a man who wouldn't employ Stalinist tactics. As we can see on the issue of missiles and the shooting down of the U-2 plane over Russia, the Cuban Missile Crisis and the arms race between the Soviet Union and the USA, Khrushchev was also no stranger, as Stalin hadn't been, to confrontation and provocation with America and her allies, and would still be a very robust Cold Warrior, perhaps in some ways more confrontational than Stalin had chosen to be. Part of this would be the cause of his downfall, which again is another conversation. What Khrushchev does achieve in 1956 is, whilst there still is oppression in the Soviet Union, whilst there still is a paranoid police state, and whilst there still is a violent reaction to any suggestion of self-determination within Eastern Europe, a great many of the central tenets of Stalinism die with the secret speech and are unrevivable. The Gulag system is, whilst on its last legs, is forever consigned to the dustbin of history following the secret speech. The cult of Zhdanov and Zhdanovism is forever forgotten. And really, there is a sense in Russia throughout the 1950s and 60s of a thaw occurring, and a general relaxation and liberalisation, and the intense and widespread fear that existed at the end of the 1930s, where terror became vastly indiscriminate, vastly more indiscriminate than it was in Nazi Germany in the same time period. That really becomes something of a thing of the past. There are all sorts of interesting stories. If you read The Whisperers by Orlando Figes, it's a good book, and Gulag by Anne Applebaum, there are all sorts of fascinating stories from this time period, following the closure of the gates of the Gulags, of people returning home and the very problematic situations they encounter of actually returning home, sometimes to share a home with their denouncer, or a neighbourhood with their denouncer, or to discover that the person that denounced them is doing their job, or has, you know, in some strange cases, married their spouse. The painful return to non-Gulag society, to mainstream society in the Soviet Union, for many Gulag inmates, was something that they a great many of them fail to really ever kind of successfully negotiate, and a great many people come home and continue their life in the Gulag of one of constant fear over food and shelter, and the attitudes and values that they learned in the Gulag, those of essentially kind of paranoia and violence, come home with them in a great many cases. But that's a slight aside. Anyway, I hope this has been useful. If you want to read more about this, then you can get hold of my ebook Stalin, the Gulags, and the Five-Year Plans. You can find that at www.explaininghistory.com, or you can follow the link underneath this podcast. If you want a bigger picture of the Russian Revolution, its cause, its course, and its changes all the way through to the end of the 20th century, then you can also download Chris Kostov's The Communist Century. That, again, you can find at explaininghistory.com, or you can download from the link below this podcast. And in an embarrassment of communist riches, we've got for students the Student's Guide to Explaining the Russian Revolution. Again, check out the site and follow the link. Anyway, I hope this has been a useful podcast for you, and I look forward to catching you on the next one. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.